Has been disconnected.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
is your program.
Nani tell me Sefa to Mataka Tata. Anyway you're going, Nani say I'm coming.
Is your program Moscow Mailbag? It's Joe again to answer your questions. The first one is from Miss Sharon Phillips of Miami, Florida. If religion is tolerated more in the Soviet Union today, then why are so many Jewish people migrating to Israel?
I think tolerated concerning religion is the wrong word, because religion today enjoys, I'd say, practically complete freedom. We hear sermons on television, Sunday schools have opened, thousands of churches, yes, thousands, have been returned to believers, members of the clergy are deputies to our parliament, and very much more. Miss Phillips, you can take it from me, someone who's lived his whole life in this country, that 90% of the Jewish people, if not more, who are emigrating are not believers. They are emigrating because they are seeking a better life. They're seeking a higher standard of living. Now, why do you think they all used to end up in Brighton Beach, New York, and not in Israel? Because the standards of living are higher in America. This was until the 50,000 a year quota came into force, when the United States actually closed its doors to a certain degree. They're also emigrating because of uncertainty for what tomorrow may bring. Rumors of an impending civil war, God forbid, pogroms and what have you. I dare say that in the past, they did emigrate, some of them, because of overt and covert discrimination on ethnic grounds. I say ethnic grounds because in the Soviet Union, a Jew is considered a person who is Jewish ethnically. I know that in the United States, a person who's considered a Jew is a person of Jewish faith. So let me conclude. Religion has nothing to do with emigration.
Mark Huminick of Western Ontario, Canada. I want to know about the unemployment rate in the USSR.
Well, according to some experts, there are 5 to 6 million unemployed in our country. In Uzbekistan, we're told every fifth able-bodied person is not employed. On the other hand, there are millions of vacancies, strange as it may seem, in just the trade network and in the services. But you can't bring in people from other parts of the country because of lack of housing. And as a result, there are restrictions on permanent residence because of lack of housing. Then, of course, there is much labor that is freed because of cutbacks in bureaucratic personnel, in automation, because of automation, and so on. But there is this satirical, if not tragic, side to the problem. One newspaper wrote, there are 36 million hidden unemployed in our country. In other words, those who hold a job but do nothing useful. You see, many years ago, I told the head of personnel of Soviet television and radio that I should get the gold star of Hero of the Soviet Union. And he says, what for? I said, for cutting our staff by one-third, if not by half, without any harm to the business. He came back with, Joe, you always say the wackiest things. A month later, I ran into him in the corridor, and he says, you know, I've been thinking about what you said. I think there's a lot of truth to what you suggested.
Mr. Harris of San Francisco, California, where do you stand on the Gulf War?
You probably know that we supported the decisions of the Security Council fully, all the way up to the use of force to free Kuwait. We branded Saddam Hussein's actions as aggression, pure and simple. Some members of our parliament say Saddam ought to be punished or tried, even if he does withdraw from Kuwait, for his aggression. We consistently speak of human values, both you do and we do, yet the lives of hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians are at stake, be they Iraqis, Israelites, or civilians of the allied nations. You must also remember that Iraq is just over maybe 100 miles or more from our Caucasian border, our southern border, and not too far from our Central Asian republics. If chemical or biological weapons are used, or God forbid nuclear weapons, these areas of the Soviet Union will be part of the contaminated zone. You see, we believe the aim should be not to destroy Iraq, and that every effort should be made and every opportunity used to attain a political solution and force Saddam to leave Kuwait. If he's smart, he ought to realize the odds are against him. The alternative, of course, would be an ocean of blood, an ecological disaster, and inevitably, of course, the defeat of Saddam.
Over to Belize now, and Gaudencio Mendez asks, what month does Russia have its lowest temperature? And it's been quite cold, hasn't it, of late, Joe?
Yes, of late, but, you know, all of January it was just a bit below and a bit above freezing, and it was the same thing last year. We practically didn't have a winter last year. Of course, the coldest month is January. In Moscow, the average January temperature, not this year, but the average is 13 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about 10 degrees Celsius. But it can get much colder. I've told you about Moscow. Now, the very coldest January temperature, and the coldest temperature in the northern hemisphere, for that matter, is in northeastern Siberia. It's in the Pole of Cold, so-called, in the Republic of Yakutia, near the settlement called Oymyakon. The average January temperature there is minus 50 degrees Celsius, which is minus 58 Fahrenheit. You don't get that in Belize, do you? But it can drop to minus 72 degrees Celsius, which is minus 97 degrees Fahrenheit. But Gaudencio, did you know that when it is that cold in Siberia, roses bloom in the subtropical regions of our Black Sea coast, just like in Florida? In northern Siberia, by the way, summer temperatures reach 95 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 35 degrees Celsius, the way it was in Arizona when I was there 3 months ago.
A few questions now from Clarence Moe, Tucson, Arizona. First, he wants to know about cable TV in the Soviet Union.
I think it would be fair to say that cable television is still in its infancy. There are, of course, small local cable television stations in many cities, Moscow included. There's one in Tallinn, in Estonia, in Leningrad, many other places. By the way, I read that one electrician in a city in the Urals opened a local cable television station, and what do you think he started showing? Erotic films. I'm told that anywhere from 3 to 6 million people watch cable television in the Soviet Union. No more. So, you see, it's not much.
How was Lenin preserved?
Well, he was embalmed and placed in a glass sarcophagus in the mausoleum on Red Square. The job of embalmment, of course, is no easy one. But we're told he himself never wanted to become a symbol, an icon, that he was made after his death. He wanted none of this deification. In fact, he wanted to be buried where his mother was laid to rest. Some people here in the Soviet Union have voiced the opinion that preserving the remains to be viewed by millions sort of tends to remind one of a pagan tradition. Well, be that as it may, the mausoleum in Soviet times has become a landmark, a tradition, a tourist attraction, if you will, and a symbol. So that's that. Others say to dismantle the mausoleum is sacrilege.
Staying on the subject of death, Clarence also asked, why does the USSR military use zinc coffins?
You've got some gory questions today, Clarence. It is in zinc coffins that our boys' remains were brought back from Afghanistan. The sealed zinc coffins, you realize, preserve the remains. I think that would have been clear. But in my mind, what is important is that we have condemned our intrusion into that country. And you've got to give Mr. Gorbachev credit for that. It was he who put an end to a long and senseless war.
Clem Carpenter of Cincinnati, Ohio. Are there plans to bring American football to the USSR in the near future?
I think you're a bit behind times. American football already has a foothold in our country. Whether it'll spread is another question. I personally have my doubts. You know, foreign sports or foreign games catch on very slowly and sometimes not at all. At present, we have 5 teams and we've been admitted into the European Association of American Football. We have teams in several cities. Our best team is the Moscow Bears, which is a professional club. In September, they played Federal Germany, and I understand our boys, on the whole, made a successful showing in the United States last year.
Back to San Francisco, and precisely to Mr. Harris again. I heard the USSR is going to hold a national referendum on whether the people want to retain the Union. Will they vote yes or no?
Well, the problem with this referendum is, as one deputy to the recent party plenary meeting said, the problem is exactly what kind of government structure do we want? Do we want a union of sovereign nations, a union of sovereign republics, or a simple concord of nations? That's the problem. And until we heard a speech by Mr. Gorbachev on the 6th of February, I think the party has been dilly-dallying in explaining this problem to the man in the street. And I still think the man in the street is not quite sure of what he's going to vote for exactly. Because, in my opinion, he has to know exactly what he's voting for, because the future of our union is at stake.
Gary McElfini, I'm sorry if I mispronounce that, Gary, of Ravenna, Ohio. Are video cassette players and video home service popular in the USSR?
Well, they certainly are popular, but there are not many around. Last year, we produced something like 400,000 video players. By 95, we will be producing 2 million. Now, if you take into consideration that there are 90 million families in this country, 2 million recorders is not very much, is it? There are several plants that produce videos. Many have been started with the help of foreign firms. But I will tell you this, on the black market, an imported video sells at a fabulous price. And yes, we do have a service where you can rent video cassettes.
Is the keeping of tropical fish in home aquariums popular?
Well, there are people, mostly kids, who keep fish in aquariums at home, including tropical fish. Some are sold in a pet store that we have here, but there's also an open market that where you can buy pets. You can buy dogs, cats, birds of every size and hue, and, of course, fish.
And yet again, back to our Mr. Harris of San Francisco. He says, I understand you aim to be a nation based on law.
Oh, yes, that is our aim. After all, we were a totalitarian state where the law court was simply an instrument of repression. Today, the courts are beginning to be independent, subject only to the law, and not to a telephone call from a party boss. Today, the court is also becoming a place where big and small may apply to defend their honor, to defend their rights. Now, the subject you've raised about a government based on law is a huge subject. One could speak about it for hours. But I'll give you two small examples. A Soviet businessman and a deputy to the Russian parliament, Artyom Tarasov, accused our president of making a secret deal with the Japanese government, selling them the four Kuril Islands, which they claim, for $200 billion. Now, our press called this a political provocation. And what do you think we learned? That Mikhail Gorbachev intends to take Tarasov to court unless he extends his regrets and says he's sorry publicly. Now, the press was in ecstasies that the court is now a place to defend your rights and your honor. And also, they said, let Mr. Gorbachev see the bad state of the premises where our lower courts are housed. I'll give you another example. The anchorman of one of our popular television programs, which has been taken off the air, is taking the top officials of Soviet television to court. Well, a sign of the times if ever there was one.
Joe Adamoff, answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. Don't forget, this program is made up of your letters, so please write in. The address, the North American Service, Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR. Your comments on this show are welcome. Mailbag's on the air every Saturday, Sunday and Wednesday, and please note our new times to the East Coast at 23:10 and 02:10 UTC, and to the West Coast at 04 and 6:10 UTC.
Except on WUSB Stony Brook, where it's heard about 10 o'clock in the evening on Saturday nights here as a part of Brain Damage. And very good evening to you. It is Saturday night again. We'll be taking phone calls at 632-6901 and got a couple of new features and exciting things that we're going to be trying out. So stay right where you are at Long Island's first station of the 90s, 90.1 FM WUSB. It's 23 minutes after 10 o'clock.
Curious orange.
Boy, I hate songs that end like that. But that's the Challenger radio, you know. You have to be ready for anything. The fall here on WUSB, as opposed to the spring. Curious Orange. From the album where they spell it completely differently. And that came out back in 1988. Boy, what memories that brings back, I'll tell you. It's 10:30. And a very good evening to you all. The program is Brain Damage. Filing papers here. Try to do as many things as possible when I come in. Sweep up a bit. File some papers. Destroy a thing or two here and there. And update myself on the news. And I guess I'll drag everyone else along in on this as well. Here's the latest news from the Associated Press. There's word of an agreement that could end El Salvador's 11-year-old civil war. I love reading the Associated Press. 11-year-old civil war. Okay. A United Nations mediator in Mexico City says Salvadoran government officials and rebel leaders reached a 3-point plan for military and legal reforms. Remember the American Basketball Association? Used to have like 3-point baskets. Well, no relation, of course, but I just was brought to mind there. As Kurdish refugees take up residence in a U.S.-run camp in northern Iraq. There's a period at the end of that. What's that doing there? There's a period at the end of that phrase. That's not a full sentence. As Kurdish refugees take up residence in the U.S.-run camp in northern Iraq. That is not a sentence. I should write down the names of the people that put these things together. I have a feeling the second part of this is also going to be an incomplete sentence, so let's just pretend there's a comma there. European leaders are calling for United Nations action to protect the Kurds. All right. French and British officials want the U.N. to ensure the Kurds don't face harassment by forces under the control of Iraqi president. Oh, come on, we all know his name. Who's the Iraqi president? I can't believe there are some people out there that don't know. We have a little Nielsen machine here that polls people and instantly. And while we got like 87% correct there, still 13% of you don't know who the president of Iraq is. Well, I'm not going to tell you, so there. In Washington State, about 13,000 striking teachers and their supporters are giving a higher profile to their message. They rallied at the state capitol grounds today, calling for big increases in education cuts. No, just kidding. Education funding. So it was a rally for education cuts. It would be taking place in Washington, D.C., not Washington State. Well, Montana National Guard troops are doing their best. And that is the news. All right, I'll finish it. They're doing their best to cover for about 5,000 state employees who are striking for higher wages. As the strike entered its third day, troops stood guard duty over prisons and cared for the elderly. That's something that takes a strike to make certain people care for the elderly. I care for the elderly all the time. It doesn't take a strike to make me care for them. Selfishness is what it is. All right. Now, that's a pretty boring newscast, I think. I mean, we could do a lot better than that. There's nothing in there. Nothing at all. No substance. No fiber. Nothing. Plenty of fluff. All right, we're gonna wander through the eight or so hours of teletype paper that has gathered throughout the day. Well, we have certainly a very full sports thing here, but I'm not going to read any of that. Because once you get started on that, you just never stop, and who wants that anyway? I can read you the weather for the Western Finger Lakes. You want that? No, I don't want that. The Central Southern Tier? I don't even know where the Central Southern Tier is. Susquehanna? No. Eastern Mohawk Valley? Binghamton and vicinity? In this day and age of modern computer technographics and all, they can't figure out a way to make that machine in there not send us weather that has nothing to do with us? Western Finger Lakes, indeed. Oh, I'll show them some Finger Lakes. Here's the nation's weather. National summaries. Men's lacrosse. Hey, Hofstra beat the Army. Rather sporting of them. Okay, here's some more news. Here we go. Major tornadoes. Okay, major tornadoes in parts of the country, and they didn't even see fit to cover it over there. Residents in tornado-stricken areas of Kansas and Oklahoma are picking up the pieces after devastating twisters that left at least 29 people dead and at least 1,500 people homeless. Kansas Governor Joan Finney has issued a state disaster declaration, the first step in getting federal assistance. Worst hit was a mobile home park in Andover where at least 19 died. Can somebody explain to me what it is with tornadoes and mobile homes? There seems to be some match made in heaven there, because the two are always drawn to each other. Every time there's a tornado, it's always the trailer parks that seem to get it first. Someone has a rational explanation for that, please. I'm waiting to hear it. I've been trying to figure that one out. Okay, NASA. Remember them? Yeah, it's time for them to have some shenanigans again. They're preparing to start fueling the Space Shuttle Discovery, which is scheduled to blast off tomorrow morning from Cape Carnival. One of the shuttle's main payloads is a set of instruments needed to conduct Star Wars research. Liftoff has already been scrubbed once. Now there's concern that morning fog may force another postponement. As if it's the first time that's ever happened. Here's some fun. The $1 billion Galileo space probe mission to Jupiter is in jeopardy, because an antenna has failed to open all the way. The Los Angeles Times says NASA scientists are contemplating launching a satellite that would help Galileo relay its information to Earth. In the meantime, engineers hope to get the antenna to work properly with computer signals. Computer signals sent into interstellar space, or interplanetary space anyway. But eventually it'll go into interstellar. You ever think about that? It's going to keep going after it hits that particular machine. It's going to keep going into interstellar space, and who knows what kind of alien probes will be commanding to do all kinds of weird things. And they're going to get pretty upset if we hack into their space probes out there. Can you imagine that? A big Secret Service raid on planet Earth from wherever? Man, that would be something. Okay, continuing along here. Trying to continue along anyway. The White House says Chief of Staff John Sununu. I always say never trust anybody that has three U's in the last name. John Sununu has, and they're all equally spaced too. It looks really weird, and the thing spacing them apart are both N's. So you got this S at the beginning, and then you got this this like weird thing in the middle. Well, you could like connect them all, and it look really cool. But anyway, it's not proper to make fun of the chief of staff's name like that, so we'll just continue. He has complied with, according to the White House, he has complied with all the regulations concerning his trips. However, Sununu is facing new allegations that he took personal and political trips at taxpayer expense and allowed corporate sponsors to pay for ski vacations. The charges appear in the latest issues of Time magazine and U.S. News and World Report. And then they repeat everything that we read before. Then we have lotto scores or lotto numbers and football scores or whatever it is they're playing at this time. Oh, severe thunderstorm watch. This sounds dangerous. Advisory, immediate broadcast requested. I guess I'm not supposed to read that part. Severe thunderstorm watch number 212. Why in the world did they number them? National Weather Service, Kansas City, Mo, 8:15 p.m. CDT, Saturday, April 27, 1991. The National Severe Storms Forecast Center has issued a severe thunderstorm watch for a large part of central Mississippi, portions of northeastern Louisiana, portions of southeastern Arkansas. Okay, so all our listeners out there, take note of that fact. Effective this Saturday night and Sunday morning until 2 a.m. CDT, large hail, dangerous lightning, and damaging thunderstorm winds are possible in these areas. And what else do we have? Sources close to the Iranian delegation visiting Syria say they don't expect an early release of Western hostages being held in Lebanon. They claim the release is being blocked by Israel's reluctance to free captives it's holding. And with the jury deadlocked in New York's so-called fatal attraction murder case, the prosecutor says he'll call for a new trial. But Carolyn Wormus' defense attorney says he'll call for the murder charge against her to be dropped. It's a real surprise there. Then we have temperatures for all over the world, but we don't want to hear those. That's pretty much it. That's everything that's come across our Associated Press machine today. I'll tell you, that's one heck of an investment they have in there. Okay, so now we all know what's going on in the world. Now we all know why we're inside. It's 10:41. The program is Brain Damage. The phone number is 632-6901. What's on your mind? How are you? What's going on in your lives? You know, we used to have a lot of regular callers to this program, and then, I don't know, I guess they sort of found other parts of life to be interested in, and they sort of drifted away. So tonight on Brain Damage, we're calling them all back. We're calling them back to update us on what's going on with them and what's going on in the world in general, now that spring is here. And we're also going to stop in with a couple of our regular features, regular telephone features. 632-6901 is our telephone number. Now, I want to celebrate something, too. I want to celebrate this with everybody out there. Actually, you know what? I think I'll do this in a couple of minutes. But first, before we celebrate this particular thing, I want to share something with you. Yeah. This came to me over the computer. Yes, computer networks. You get marvelous things sent to you, and this is probably the best thing I've gotten this year. Definitely the best thing I've gotten this year. You know what it is? Three guesses. No, forget it. We don't have time. Dan Quayle quotes. Oh, they're so amazing. They're so incredible. Dan Quayle quotes. You just can't beat this. Can't beat it with a stick. If I see some phone activity while we're doing this, I'll cut to the phone and see what's going on out there in the real world. But I have to see some activity. Right now we got one caller on the line. Let's get a couple more and we'll go to the phone. 632-6901. Okay, Dan Quayle. This is Vice President Dan Quayle comparing the offensive capabilities of the Warsaw Pact with the defensive system of NATO. Dan Quayle here. Bobby Knight told me this. There is nothing that a good defense cannot beat a better offense. In other words, a good offense wins. And this is another quote from him here. Why wouldn't an enhanced deterrent, a more stable peace, a better prospect to denying the ones who enter conflict in the first place to have a reduction of offensive systems and an introduction to defensive capability? I believe that is the route this country will eventually go. All right, that's number two. I'm not going to make it through here. That's pretty apparent because I've got three pages of these things. Let's try one or two more. Our vice president. I shouldn't be laughing. This is not a funny thing to be contemplating here. Republicans understand the importance of bondage between a mother and child. yes. Okay, Vice President Dan Quayle on the planet Mars. I'm not making this up. I'm getting looks. No, I'm not making this up. I'm not making this up. He really said these things. He really did, and he's going to say more, too. This is like having Reagan back again, except with youth and vigor. Okay, Vice President Dan Quayle on Mars. You're going to love this. Oh, I haven't had trouble reading something like this for a long time on the air, but I'm going to have to... This is a test for me. Mars. Mars is essentially in the same orbit, somewhat the same distance from the sun, which is very important. We have seen pictures where there are canals, we believe, and water. If there is water, that means there is oxygen. If oxygen, that means we can breathe. And, okay, I'm going to go to the phones in just a second. I see them ringing over there. Okay, I'm going to just read this one on Hawaii. Since we've got the one on Mars, we have to read one on Hawaii. This was said in September 1989. In Hawaii. Dan Quayle. Hawaii has always been a very pivotal role in the Pacific. It is in the Pacific. It is a part of the United States that is an island that is right here. Can't go on.
It's a part of everything else, but it doesn't belong to anything. This is simply another additional...
And Dad always bring that King missile. 632-6901. As we struggle along here. Boy, imagine. Imagine him in the White House. I mean, I like a bit of fun, but... why not? You know, why not? It could be... You know, like some kind of drug that no one's ever tried before. It'll be an experiment, you know, except all of us will be the experimenters at the same time. Well, in 1992, actually in 1992 we're going to get Bush again, aren't we? So we're talking 1996 for Quayle. Yeah, about that time I think we won't care anymore, so Dan Quayle is a shoo-in. 632-6901. Good evening, what's on your mind?
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
Excuse me?
You're excused. What did you do?
Oh man, nothing much. Tonight, my friend Jason and I, we went to, downtown in our town. And,
what town is that?
Huntington.
Oh, downtown Huntington is actually quite nice.
Yeah.
As far as downtowns go. I'm sorry?
It wasn't so nice for us this evening though.
Why is that?
My friend was wearing a Pittsburgh hat, okay? And, underneath the brims of our hats we have stickers. And under mine I have a Public Enemy sticker. And under his he has some Fishbone stickers. And this kid comes up to us,
mm-hmm.
and he has a hat on, so I didn't notice that he was a skinhead. And he's like, yo, man, what's up with the nigger stickers under your hat?
Mm-hmm.
So I took great offense at that. I'm white.
There's no reason not to take offense.
I didn't want to, start a fight with him or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a pretty peaceful individual. You know, I just, I asked him why he said that and stuff. So, anyway, a bunch of his friends, jump out, from behind this, alleyway type
uh-huh.
situation, and so my friend and I got beaten up pretty badly.
Was this right in the middle of downtown Huntington?
No, it was right by the park, kind of.
Okay.
So I don't know. I think my arm's broken now. I mean, I'm really fed up with white supremacists and.
Well, is this your first contact with it?
No, as a matter of fact, it's not. But I skateboard a lot.
Yeah.
And I've been chased by skinheads just on the grounds that I skateboard,
Well, now, keep in mind, not all skinheads are white supremacists. A lot of people make that mistake. You know, people who shave their heads, that could just be shaving their heads for no particular reason. And what you're referring to are a bunch of white racists.
Exactly.
No question. Did you report this?
No.
Well, why not?
Well, I know one of them.
Uh-huh.
And, Well, not friendly, but he's he's not a, I don't know, maybe I will.
Well, he probably wouldn't be happy with you if you reported it, but still, you're not in this to make him happy, are you?
No, I'm not.
And, you know, by you reporting it, maybe you'll prevent it from happening to somebody else. Maybe they'll come down hard on them.
Yeah.
Especially if you know who one of them is, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, don't let people violate you like that. It's, you know, that's how victims are made. And, you know, next time it happens, you may grow to accept it. You may grow to expect it, actually. And that's no way to live. Right?
I mean, like, I don't know. I just really didn't feel like, well, I mean, I know I should have reported it, but, like at the time that it happened, I was just, you know, I was pretty passive. I don't know. I've never, like, recently, I've just been like, my friend here, he was with me then. He's asking about passive confrontation. You know?
Well, passive confrontation works better in large numbers.
Yeah.
And with hordes of media people around too. So, I mean, do you think this is something atypical for Huntington?
Not so much Huntington as Northport.
Uh-huh.
A lot of skinheads in Northport, like violent type skinheads.
Uh-huh. Well, then you've got to bring it to a head, not you particularly, but we all have to. If that is the fact, in fact, what is happening there, then we've got to confront it and deal with it. But ignoring it certainly is not going to, I'm not saying you're ignoring it, but if we all ignore it and try to just excuse this as something that happens, it's going to get worse. Because it's worse than it was, what, 5 years ago?
Oh, yeah. It's
definitely worse. So, you got to look for those things in your hometown.
Hmm. Oh, I want to thank you for playing King Missile before.
Well, I just played a very short ID. In fact, I didn't even hear them say WUSB on it, but I guess they did somewhere. Because they call it a WUSB ID, so I don't quite know what it was. But yeah, they're one of my favorite bands.
Yeah. It was really cool. One of my friends... who goes to Syracuse, brought home a demo tape of them, during Thanksgiving vacation.
Yeah.
I liked it very much.
Yeah, they're a fun group. I saw them in the city, actually, in a hotel.
Oh, yeah?
They're one of the few bands that can play, like, in a hotel cafeteria and and do justice. So are you going to adjust the way you dress at all? Or are you going to keep going out the way you are?
No, I refuse to compromise anything. You know, because of them.
Uh-huh. No. Make sure you don't, and make sure other people know about this. And by calling us tonight, I'm sure lots of people already, now they know about it. Let's find out what they're going to do about it.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
Okay, good luck.
Thanks.
632-6901 is our telephone number, area code 516. And, looking at these Dan Quayle quotes, but I don't know if I can... okay, maybe one more and I'll go to the phone. Oh, this is a good one. Vice President Dan Quayle winning friends while speaking to the United Negro College Fund. What a terrible thing to have lost one's mind, or not to have a mind at all. How true that is. Good evening. Anyone there? I know someone's there because this phone has been ringing for a good long time, so someone's got to be there. I hate to just hang up on someone who's been ringing the phone for 25 minutes, but, you know, maybe they're speaking into the phone, but we can't hear them because somebody took the mouthpiece out of the phone. Sometimes that happens. I don't think there's anybody there. Is anybody there? Nope, nobody's there. How sad. 632-6901. Good evening. Good evening.
Oh, yeah, hi.
How you doing?
What's up?
Not much.
You think you can play a Fishbone song for me? That last song, that last story that guy just told me, like, really made me angry.
Well, how would playing a Fishbone song solve anything?
What?
How would playing a Fishbone...
No, the new record came out, and I really like it, and the first song off the album kind of...
First song off the new Fishbone album. We have that on CD, I hope. I'll see if I can get to it in a little while.
Oh, it's Fight the Youth.
Fight the
With
Youth?
Poison Minds. I like that song.
Does it relate to this?
No, it's more of a general sort of statement, but I don't know. I just, you know, it's upsetting that someone would do that, so, you know.
Okay.
I just don't want the kid to get too upset.
No? But we all should get upset to a degree.
No, he should get upset, but I don't think he should
I hear you. I hear you.
I hope I'm making myself clear.
Go ahead.
I just, you know, I want him to feel better, at least about himself right now, you know, and listen to some Fishbone. Cheer up.
That sounds good to me.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah,
thanks for calling.
Don't give up the fight. That's all.
All right.
Okay.
632-6901 is our telephone number. And what do we have here? We've got a record. I was going through the record library before. I do that sometimes. And I was wandering around, and I found this record I have not seen in this place for, it must be, over 5 years now. We all thought this record was lost forever, and now here it is back again. Apparently it was misfiled somewhere, and somebody just found it and happened to put it back in the right place. When you have a record library as huge and expansive as ours, I guess this kind of thing happens, but sure is nice to see it come back. It's a compilation record of all kinds of electronic musical people. And one of the people on there is Laurie Anderson. Yeah, Laurie Anderson. This is before she got at all famous, you know, before she even put out her first album. This is when she was nobody, nothing. A mere speck of dirt on the sidewalk. And she has actually two pieces on this record. We're going to listen to one because it has to do with telephones and things like that. And I think it's pretty neat. It's called New York Social Life, back in 1977. Done with Laurie Anderson on the telephone and Scott Johnson on the tambura. And their definition of Laurie Anderson here, or their description of Laurie Anderson here, she uses the recorded medium to create fascinating songs molded in pop vocal style, but charged with an avant-garde musical sensibility and an incisive poetic sense, incorporating a healthy dose of humor and satire. These pieces, often performed in a theatrical manner, feature Anderson's voice, half singing, half crooning, against curious, repetitive, instrumental figures, overdubbed in separate passes of the tape, in parentheses for all us cretins out here, on different tracks of a multi-track recorder. That's what that means. That's all they say about her in the entire record, so they didn't think too much of her. Other people on here, Johanna M. Beyer, Ania Lockwood, Pauline Oliveros, Laurie Spiegel, I've heard of her, Megan Roberts, and Ruth Anderson, no relation to Laurie Anderson. They all have pieces on this record as well. The record is called New Music for Electronic and Recorded Media. You know, it's kind of silly to name a record New Music when it's going to sit around for 14 years. I mean, it's completely out of date now. It's not new anymore. Yet, I have to call this New Music for Electronic and Recorded Media. It's not new. It's old music now. So, going to change the title? I have to cross it out and write a new title in? No. Bad planning, folks. Bad planning. This came out on Arch Records. I don't even know if they're still in existence. I think they're not. Arch Records of Berkeley, California. So, this is probably out of print. So yeah, get your tape recorders ready and record this. And listen to it in stereo, too. It's a lot of fun. Laurie Anderson here on WUSB Brain Damage.
Well, I was lying in bed one morning, trying to think of a really good reason to get up, and the phone rang, and it was Jerry, and she said,
"Hey, hi. How are you? What's going on? How's your work going?"
"Oh, fine. You know, just waking up, but it's fine. It's going okay. How's yours?"
"Oh, a lot of work, you know. I'm trying to make some money, too. Listen, I've got to get back to it. Just thought I'd call to see how you are."
I said, "Yeah, you know, we really should get together next week, you know, have lunch and talk." And then she said,
"Yeah, I'll be in touch. Okay."
"Okay.
Listen, take care.
Take it easy.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye now."
And I get up, and the phone rings again, and it's a man from Cleveland, and he says,
"Hey, hi. How are you? Listen, I'm doing a performance series, and I'd like you to do something in it. You know, you could make a little money. I don't know how I feel about your work, you know. It's not really my style, kind of trite. But listen, it's just my opinion. Don't take it personally. So listen, I'll be in town next week. I gotta go now, but I'll give you a call. We'll have lunch. We can discuss a few things."
I hang up, and it rings again, and I don't answer it. And I go out for a walk. They drop in at the gallery, and they say, "Hey, hi. How are you?" "Fine. You know, how's your work going?" "Okay. You know, it's just not like it was in the 60s. Those were the days. There's just no money around now. You know, survive, produce, stick it out. It's a jungle out there, so just keep working. And the phone rings, and she says, oh, excuse me, will you?
Well, hi. How are you? How's your work?
Good.
Well, stick it out. It's not the 60s, you know. Listen, I gotta go now. Your lunch would be great. Next week? Yeah, great. Very busy now, but next week would be fine. Okay, bye now.
And I go to McGee for a bite, and I see Frank. And I go over to his table, and I say, hey, Frank, hi, how are you? How's your work? Good. Okay, yeah, mine's okay, too. You know, I'm broke, you know, but working. Listen, I gotta go. Okay, listen, we should really get together. Why don't you drop by sometime? Yeah, that'd be great. Listen, take care. Take it easy. I'll see you. I'll call you. Bye-bye. Bye now. And I go to a party, and everyone's sitting around wearing these party hats, and it's really awkward, and no one can think of anything to say. So we all move around fast. And it's, hi, how are you? Hey, listen, where have you been? Nice to see you. Sorry I didn't make your performance last week. Listen, we should really get together next week. You know, I'll call you. I'll see you. Okay, bye-bye. And I go home, and the phone rings, and it's Alan, and he says,
hey, hi. Listen, I'm going to have a show on cable TV, and it's going to be about loneliness. You know, people in the city who, for whatever sociological, psychological, philosophical reasons, just can't seem to communicate. You know, the gap, the gap. You know, it'll be a talk show and people will phone in, but we will say at the beginning of each program, listen, don't call in with your personal problems, because we don't want to hear them.
And I'm going to sleep, and it rings again, and it's Mary, and she says,
hey, Lori, hi, how are you? Listen, just call to say hi, and don't worry, listen, just keep working. I gotta go now. I know it's late, but we should really get together next week. And listen, Lori, if you want to talk, I'll leave my answering machine on, and just give me a ring anytime.
Oh, how true, how true. Happened to me just the other day. Laurie Anderson with New York Social Life. Well, I looked for the Fishbone record, and we don't seem to have it. So, can't play it if we don't have it. I'll keep looking, though. It's time for the tripods. Yes, they weren't on last week, but they are on this week, and they're still in France, and they have all kinds of exciting adventures to live through, and I guess they have to live through them right now. But first, somebody special to tell you just what it is you're listening to. Speak up. Boy, this thing is takes a long time. But when it starts, I'm sure it'll be worth it.
This is William Merle, and you are listening to Dead City Radio on WUSB, Stony Brook, New York.
What are you here for? What are you here for? You're all here. You're all here to go.
Radio Free Long Island, in depreciation with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, proudly presents the exciting adventures of the Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. When we left Howard and Kathy last week, they were still in France, speeding towards Nice in search of the elusive statue. And a stranger has come upon the scene who may hold some answers. And as we join them...
I went to the same statue-making school as Wally Chuberg. That was many years ago.
Ah, so you must be a very good friend of his.
An acquaintance, yes. A friend, no. One cannot become friends with a man like Wally Chuberg. He tends to prefer statues to human beings.
Oh?
That's too bad.
Yes, after all, the statues he makes are models of human beings.
That does not matter. Wally Chuberg is a very cold man. He just doesn't like people. Tries to avoid them whenever possible.
Well, he lives somewhere here in Nice, doesn't he?
He resides in northern Nice in a 10,000-acre mansion behind huge cement halls.
Oh.
And he does not accept visitors.
Somehow that doesn't surprise me.
Maybe he's listed in the telephone book.
I really don't think so, Kathy.
Well, we've got to try everything, you know, Howard.
I know.
Leave no stone unturned.
We could send him a letter.
My friends, you will be wasting your time. For one thing, the statue of Charles de Gaulle, for which you are in search, is not even in Wally Chuberg's possession.
It's not? Well, then where is it? I mean, that's the reason we're here, after all.
You will not be happy to hear this, Mr. Trippard. I'm afraid...
Wait a minute. Are you about to tell us that the statue's been destroyed?
After all this time and effort...
We've been wasting our time?
No, Mr. Tripod. The statue is very much intact. That, I can assure you.
But that's good news.
Perhaps. But you still don't know where the statue is.
It couldn't be that bad, could it?
I'm afraid it is. The statue is located somewhere in the sewer system of Nice.
You're kidding.
Oh, Howard, I don't want to go crawling around in sewers.
Especially in French sewers. They're very elaborate, you know. Well, I once heard a story where even the person who built them got lost in them once.
Yes, it was in a Parisian sewer system over a century ago. But these are the Nice sewers. And they're even more complicated. In addition, they're 10 times as secretive. Only a few even know of their existence.
Gee.
Well, that sounds kind of scary, Howard.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if I want to...
Are you sure you do, Howard? It'll be fun. Where's your sense of adventure?
Why do you keep asking me that?
I know very little about the sewer system itself. However, I do know where there happens to be an entrance.
I just want to find out one thing. Now, what in the world is this statue doing in the middle of the sewers?
Why, to keep people such as ourselves away from it, of course.
But why would anyone except us want to get at it in the first place?
My friends, do you think you are the only ones who want to find 200 million francs?
200 million francs? What? You mean there's a treasure inside the statue?
You did not know?
That's unbelievable.
You see, we wanted to find the statue so that we could replace the one that belonged to our neighbor back home,
right,
which we broke in our clumsy way.
We thought we could just come on over and pick it up. We weren't planning on a treasure hunt.
Well, my friends, you have found yourselves one. Do you want to help me find it?
What do you say, Kathy?
I say let's do it.
And so the tripods move one step closer towards uncovering the statue for which they are looking. But they step right into an exciting treasure hunt. And you want to be with us next time when we'll hear Kathy say...
Come on, Howard. Where's your sense of adventure?
That's next time on the exciting adventures of the Tripod Family. For Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms, this is Don Topeka.
Julie Cruz. Damn good song. The Tibetan mix of Rocking Back Inside My Heart. I never heard that before. I never heard that mix anyway. It's quite an adventure. Right there on the compact disc. Well, our telephone number is 632-6901. And we also heard from the tripods as they get further and further into something I'm sure they'll regret. Find out about that next week at this time. And we are taking phone calls and lots of other things as well here at the radio station. Have I seen Newsday today? The article about the State University of New York at Stony Brook? It's always fun when there's an article about the campus here. Listen to this. This is about the president's office being taken over. I'm sure everyone out there has heard about that. Yeah, they took over the president's office just like they did in the City University. Except here at the State University at Stony Brook, it was a whole lot more pleasant. Most polite people you would ever imagine taking over an office, repeatedly apologizing and tidying up and, you know, thinking up ways to do things better, maybe, and just staying for 2 days and then leaving and telling people they were going to leave in 2 days. It was most amazing. A model for student protesters of the future. Look to these people. Follow their lead. All right. The title of the story is SUNY Students Civilly Disobedient. Get it? Civilly disobedient? Hey, someone in Newsday is making a lot of money and earning it, too, for writing those headlines. See the one about Alphonse D'Amato today? Ticked off. Because he's on 60 Minutes, get it? And he's upset about being on 60 Minutes. There's a picture of the clock, and there's a picture of Al D'Amato. And ticked, it's good. It's real good. Quality journalism. Anyway, let's get back to the Stony Brook story. Thanking State University of Stony Brook President John Marburger for his banana bread and leaving a vat of peanut butter in return, about 10 students who had occupied his office for 48 hours left peacefully at 7:50 a.m. yesterday morning as premised, whatever. The students, who refused to identify themselves, were not a militant or destructive lot. They watered the plants and vacuumed the rug before taking their leave, officials said. Most people would vacuum the plants and water the rugs, but not these guys. Once again, they said in a note stuck to a refrigerator door, accept our sincere apologies. Now we know that the president of the university has a refrigerator. See, little bits of information are filtering out from this, and the right people know how to interpret it. Okay. Cognizant of the university's smoking in designated areas only policy, commonly known as the SIDAOP, it is. And eager to obey, the students queried the administration on the availability of a smoking area within the presidential suite. There was one room they could use, they were told. The students promised to replace a toaster oven, which had, quote, objected to a cinnamon Pop-Tart by spitting shards of glass across the kitchenette, unquote. Warning Marburger to ascertain the new machine's likes and dislikes before operating it. Your life is more important than any breakfast treat. Now we also know he has a kitchenette. The students, who stressed that they were protesting state budget cuts and tuition increases for the SUNY system, in that order, and want higher state taxes on the wealthy instead, barricaded themselves in Marburger's office after they surprised a custodian cleaning it shortly before 8 a.m. on Wednesday. University spokesman Dan Forbush said there was virtually no damage or disruption except a few nail holes resulting from the students nailing 2x4s across the door. The disruption to the university was minimal. We were able to transfer phone and computer lines, and the president was out of town, Forbush said yesterday. Marburger was in Washington, D.C. to testify about management of federal grant money for research at institutions such as Stony Brook. And yes, that's interesting. They can forward the phone lines. I mean, we can do that here. We can just press a few buttons, and our calls can be forwarded to anywhere on campus. But you can also do it within the phone system. You know, you can bypass the human element and just do it on the computer level. So I imagine that's what they did there. In a postscript to the note,
The students suggested that if Marburger should ever be in need of a Domino's pizza while barricaded within his office, quote, the delivery people are more than willing to cooperate with unorthodox methods of pizza distribution. Simply lower some twine and Domino's pizza will deliver. University officials were somewhat puzzled by a herd of small porcelain turtles left on a receptionist's desk. A tiny flag planted among the turtles identified the occupiers as Students United for a Responsible Budget. SURB? S-U-R-B? I don't know. I'm not familiar with that particular organization. They're affiliated with Shiite Muslims or something. So that's the story from Newsday as to what's going on at Stony Brook. What fun. What fun indeed. Now let's take a look at some more Dan Quayle quotes as long as we're in a jovial mood. Okay, this is Vice President Dan Quayle speaking to the American Samoans. And he pronounces the capital Pogo Pogo. You all look like happy campers to me. Happy campers you are. Happy campers you have been. And as far as I am concerned, happy campers you will always be. There you go. That's the vice president speaking. Here's something else. He stumbled in response to a question about his opinion of the Holocaust. He said it was, quote, an obscene period in our nation's history, unquote. Then, trying to clarify his remark, Quayle said he meant this century's history and added a confusing comment. We all lived in this century. I didn't live in this century, he said. It's all documented. He did say this. He also said, we expect them, meaning Salvadoran officials, to work toward the elimination of human rights. And also speaking about El Salvador, El Salvador is a democracy, so it's not surprising that there are many voices to be heard there. Yet in my conversations with Salvadorans, I have heard a single voice. I believe we are on an irreversible trend toward more freedom and democracy, but that could change. Okay, how about this? This is one of my personal favorites. Dan Quayle here. One word sums up probably the responsibility of any vice president, and that one word is to be prepared. 1996, I can just... I can't wait. And we might get him sooner than that, too, you know? If something nasty happens, we might get... This could be incredible. And we wouldn't have any say in the matter, too. You know, if Bush snuffs it any time between now and whenever his office is over, we don't have it. I mean, we don't have a say. No matter what we do, we can't say, no, don't put this guy in. He's in. He's vice president. That's all it's going to take. He's one heartbeat away. I always hated that phrase, but it is true. One heartbeat away from the presidency. Whew. Most incredible. Most incredible indeed. Yes, I know. It's late. We're getting notes, letters, symbols passed to us because one of our favorite features is late. Okay, it's late. Big deal. We'll get to it. I mean, this isn't a commercial station. We don't have to play things at a certain time. We can play things when we want to play them. But I guess I should play it now. I didn't do that intentionally. The wrong switch was down. Over hills and mountains, through oceans and forests, the question has plagued humanity since the very beginning. What's for lunch?
Good morning. Today, Friday, April 26th, at Kelly Cafeteria for lunch is scalloped beef and noodles, spinach souffle. The hot deli menu is baked ham. Dinner is chicken nuggets, beef goulash, tricolored pasta with broccoli and red peppers. H Cafeteria is Sloppy Joe's, fried clams with French fries. Their hot deli menu is a Monte Crisco. The dinner is baked fish du jour, soup and pepper hero, sausage and pepper hero, and fettuccine Alfredo. What cafeteria for lunch is the scalloped beef and noodles, spinach souffle, and their hot deli menu is baked ham. Dinner is pork chops with herb stuffing, beef and broccoli, and stuffed shells. Thanks again for calling the FSA hotline.
Sounded like someone was yanking the phone out of her hand. Well, now the secret has been shared with one and all. You know about the fish du jour and the goulash and the sloppy joes? And that kind of thing goes on every day. No more. It's 11:23. You're listening to Brain Damage here on WUSB in Stony Brook. And, boy, you know, talk about frustration. You know, have you ever dealt with, I'm not sure we've all dealt with morons, you know? Morons, dimwits, imbeciles, halfwits, nitwits, all those kind of people. They're everywhere you look. But they're always, 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 always in positions of power. You know? And you wonder, why is that? Who appointed them to those high exalted positions of power? You know, is it just fate? Just cruel fate putting them in a position to dictate the rules of life to you? Or is it something more sinister than fate? Yes, there are things more sinister than fate out there. I don't even want to think about that. Oh, boy. It all sort of came to a head, which is an interesting expression in itself. But it started with a bank, okay? Started with a bank. Simple thing. You know, nice, simple transaction-type things that you get used to dealing with on a day-to-day basis. Now, I've got this bank card, okay? In fact, I'm going to take it out of my pocket right now so you can actually hear this bank card. Okay, here's my bank card. That's what it sounds like when you drop it on the table. Regular bank card. Got a magnetic strip on the back. No big deal. However, there is one machine, only one bank machine in the world that I have found that does not like my bank card. And coincidentally enough, it's the one machine that belongs to the bank that my bank card is from. In other words, I can go to a bank machine of any bank in New York State that's on the NICE network, New York Cash Exchange, and they cheerfully take my card and give me whatever I ask most of the time. But not this one machine. Now, why should that bother me? I can just go to another machine. Yes, but when you make deposits, on those rare occasions when you actually make deposits, you have to go to your bank. You can't make a deposit into another bank, right? You have to make a deposit into your bank machine. So when I go up to this bank with money in my hand to put in the machine, it refuses to take my card. Now, I'll give my bank credit. They thought about this. They thought that maybe something would go wrong with one of the machines, so they put a second machine next to the first machine. And, yeah, the second machine takes my card, no problem. But the second machine doesn't take deposits. It doesn't take deposits. It's a huge machine, but for some reason, it doesn't have one of those little deposit hole things that you put envelopes in. Now, it will ask you, do you want to make a deposit? And if you say, yes, I want to make a deposit, you'll hang the whole system. It will just sit there while it tries to figure out how it's going to take your deposit when it doesn't have a hole to put the envelope in. But never mind all that. That's not the important thing. Now, we're talking about computers there. Now I want to talk about humans. I tried explaining this to the people at my nice bank. No pun intended there. Very nice people at my bank. I said, look, got this bank card, and it works at every single machine except your machine. And coincidentally enough, that's the machine that I have to make deposits in because the machine next to it doesn't allow deposits. And they said, yeah, that machine doesn't have a deposit thing. I said, yeah, well, do you think it'll get a deposit thing? They said, no, it's not going to get a deposit thing because it doesn't have one. And it can't have one because it's not built for one. So, realizing that I'm meeting a brick wall there, I decided to, sort of put that aside and, go. Can I help you? What?
Someone's on the air for me. Thank you very much. Oh, I love getting messages while I'm speaking to millions of people. Someone's on the air for me. I'm on the air for me. What does that mean? Someone's on the phone for me. Okay, well, it's a phone-in show. What do you expect? 632-6901 is the telephone number. Where was I? Yes, so the bank machine does not take deposits. I know that much. We all know that much. It's a well-established fact. What I want is for the one that does to just take my card. Is that asking too much? Yes. It's asking way too much. The question I was met with was, do you have an eel skin wallet? And I said, what? I'm talking about my troubles depositing money, and you're asking me what kind of wallet I have? They said, yeah, well, you know, sometimes eel skin wallets demagnetize bank cards. Now, I'm not going to tell them that I don't even carry my bank card in a wallet. I just stick it in my pocket with all my other magnetic strip cards that don't seem to have a problem. So I said, no, I'm fine. You know, it's in a regular non-eel skin wallet type thing. I said, well, you're not keeping it near your other cards, are you? Well, where else am I going to keep my bank card except it's going to be near other cards? I don't keep every card in a different pocket. So, of course, it's going to be, you know, in the vicinity of other cards. Well, that could be your problem. Your other cards might be demagnetizing your bank card. That's when I realized that while we were both speaking English, we were obviously speaking different inflections of English, because the fact that my card works at all 10,000 other machines in the world has been completely missed. There's still something wrong with my card. There couldn't possibly be anything wrong with the bank machine, because the bank machine is run by qualified experts, of which I was speaking to one. So, dead end number one. I mean, I hate dead ends. I used to live on a dead end. I hate them. Banks. Who needs banks? Well, we all need banks, unfortunately, but the people who run banks sometimes, you have to wonder. You simply have to wonder, are they in it for, you know, for malice or what? What are they in it for? Promo. No, I have to play a promo. Okay, I've got to play a promo, folks. But there's more to this. There's more to this story. The bank was only the first brick wall, only the first dead end. How many people out there agree with me? How many people have gone through similar experiences? I want to see a show of lights here. Okay, I see a couple of people on the phone line. But if you've met imbeciles and cretins and morons recently, I want to hear your story. 632-6901. This is not a cretin or an imbecile. Somebody who's coming to Stony Brook.
Hey, man, Bob Dylan's coming to town. He's coming on May 7th. That's right, man. Believe it. Stony Brook concerts in association with Ron Delton and Larry. Down there. Tickets are $17 with the student ID, $22.50 for the public. And they're available at the Stony Brook box office and the Ticketmaster for all locations. You can charge it by phone by calling 888-9-GRAND, man. The show starts at 8 o'clock and it's at the brand new indoor sports complex on the campus of State University at Stony Brook. For more information, you can check out the box office at 632-6464.
I wonder when they stoned that guy. $17 for a concert?
Dylan at Stony Brook. You gotta be there, man.
Yeah, well, I gotta be, I guess. $17 for a concert? I don't know, man. I don't know. That's an awful lot of money. But I guess he is Bob Dylan, and he must need the cash or something. Otherwise, he wouldn't be coming here. 632-6901. Hey, we only have one open line. How do you like that? Well, come and fill that open line. We're gonna get to all the calls tonight. I promise. So, yeah, what was I up to? I was up to the bank. Bank was part one. I decided to get everything done in one day, you know, fix all the problems that have been racking up. And, you know, it was part one of a whole horror show of awful events that were going to take place. Oh, I don't even want to get into some of these things. They're morbid.
Okay, I'll get into one of them. Got this camcorder. This camcorder that I've been playing with the last year or so. And one day when I went down to Washington, D.C. for the demonstration in January, just all of a sudden, stopped working. Just stopped working like that. And so the thing was like lying around my house for a while, you know, just sitting there. And I knew I'd have to bring it in and get it fixed at some point, figure out what's wrong with it. So the day finally came, right after I got off the phone with the bank people. I was in a great mood at that point. I decided to take a trip down to the video place. A place where you fix camcorders and other things like that. What do you think the first thing I see when I walk into the door is? A big sign with a picture of my VCR that I have back at home. You know, the video cassette recorder? A big picture of my VCR that I bought at, a discount store. Saying, boy, if you buy this, you're a real sucker. And you're going to be in here all the time. And you're going to have nothing... You'll have nothing but grief and woe if you buy this. Can you imagine that? I don't even have a problem with my VCR. That's working fine. At least I thought it was working fine. Now I'm all paranoid about that because they put up a big sign with a picture of my VCR saying this is the worst VCR in the world. I'll tell you, folks, it was horrible. And then the guy looks at my camcorder. Looks at my camcorder and looks in the lens. And he says, oh, this thing's completely shot. It's completely shot because the shutter won't open or some obscure thing like that. It doesn't even open it up and tells me my camcorder will never work again. It will never see again. I'll never take another wedding picture or bar mitzvah picture or anything like that. You might as well throw it into the river. That's what he said to me. Throw it in the river. Don't know why he said that. Throw it in the sound would make a lot more sense, but throw it in the river, he said. So now I've got this $600 portable clock that I carry around with me. And I'm hoping that since the thing, just went out, that maybe if I jostle it a bit, it'll just go on again. You know? Mechanical things can work that way, can't they? Okay, final tale of tribulation involves motor vehicles, automobiles, those things you drive around. I don't know if you ever left a car at a mechanic, and sometimes they say, I'll get to that first thing in the morning. Bring it by first thing in the morning. What time do you open? 5 a.m. Yeah, right. Sure, I'm going to get down there while the chickens are crowing or whatever. Give me a break. Some of us have normal hours. Sometimes I don't get up until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You can't bring your car down then, so you have to bring it by the night before and leave it in this gated area. Which is really interesting because everybody leaves their car there at a certain time. And they all leave their keys in envelopes. And on the envelope, they write down what's wrong with their car. Now, if you go there on a Sunday night or something... Everybody all weekend long has been doing this, and the envelopes literally are falling out of the chute. So you can look. You can look at all the envelopes lying there, and you can see what's wrong with all these cars. And if you're a nasty person, if you're a real nasty person, you can take one of the envelopes with the key inside and take the person's car, go out for a drive, go to the city, come back, put the car where it was, and nobody would ever know. And if you're even nastier, you can take two cars that are the same make and model and switch the license plates. So then the poor fool of a repairman is going to walk out with the envelope in hand and look for the car with the license plate and fix the wrong problem. Incredible. The amount of things that you can do if you were an evil person. Well, I didn't do any of that. To show you where my heart was, I did none of that. I went in and I just left my envelope with my problem, with my particular problem. Huh? You want to borrow my newspaper now? Okay. Here you go. Take. All right. We have a very informal station here. Fortunately, I don't need my newspaper anymore. So, I left my little envelope with my particular problem, and there's a little box there. A little box that says, should there be additional work? Do you want us to A, not do it? B, call you? Or C, just do it and leave me alone? well. Seeing as how they were going to open in about an hour and I was going to go to sleep, I figured I didn't want to be bothered, so I would just check it and say, don't bother me, just do the work. Well, what do you think happened? My car did need additional work, lo and behold. But for some reason, they decided to call me, and they got my answering machine, and they left a message saying, we're trying to get a hold of you. But they didn't say why. And then I finally woke up and called them back, and they said, yeah, your car needs all kinds of work, all kinds of things that you never even dreamed of, parts that you never knew you had. And it's going to amount to hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And I said, okay, I guess that's the way things were going, so it makes perfect sense. But they couldn't do it today because I never called them back. Even though I checked off that stupid box that said, don't call me, they called me anyway, and since I didn't call them back, they didn't do the work, so I brought my car down there and left it there all day long for no reason at all. No reason at all. Now I've got to do it again. And I have to pay all this money for something, for a car that doesn't have anything wrong with it. You know, you bring it down for these checkups every now and then. You bring it down for, you know, the 10,000-mile check and the 20,000-mile check and the 700,000-mile check. So you just feel like being a good citizen and doing that. You know, God knows what kind of trouble you could get into if you don't. What they don't tell you, though, is that they keep charging you more and more each time you do this. And then they find more things wrong with your car that you never knew were wrong with your car, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. So now, yeah, I have an appointment to be ripped off. Isn't that amazing? I know that I have to pay a huge amount of money. I've already gotten a surprise, and I don't have the actual bill of goods in my hand. Well, one thing at least I did get some good response from. You may have noticed I wasn't here last week, and there's a reason for that. Last week I was in New Jersey at the Trenton Computer Festival, which is supposedly the country's oldest computer festival, whatever that means. In all honesty, it wasn't really that good. I mean, they're supposed to have flea markets there. You're supposed to be able to buy all kinds of neat things. But it started to rain. Everybody was leaving, which I thought was kind of stupid. If you want to sell things, you don't leave. But these people were leaving, so I wasn't able to get as much as I wanted. But I was able to get a couple of good things. One thing in particular being a, you know, one of those little intercoms they sell, you know, in Radio Shack and places like that, where you plug one in, and then somehow it goes over the electrical current, and the other one picks it up. So for $5, I've gotten these two little things. I can plug one in, and then plug another one in another part of my house, and make this tremendous screeching noise in any particular part of the house that I want. I mean, what a nifty thing. And I can do it the other way around, too. I can have the screeching noise come back at me in the other direction. You know, and most times people would have to pay like $60 or $70 to get such a little thing. But I was smart. $5. $5 for a little screechy intercom. Proof that if you use your head, you can get a good deal. But you got to know where to look. You got to know what to get. Well, there's all kinds of people out there that will do you, you know, that will take you for all you're worth, and then some. That's what credit cards are for. But occasionally, you make out all right. I got these little screechy intercoms. Oh, I'm so proud of them. You know, they... There's only two, though. I wish I had, like, four or five, but... you can listen on a radio, too. You can turn on a radio and listen to whatever somebody is saying. I can plug this into somebody's house and spy on them. You know, the baby monitor feature is what they call that. Well, enough said about that. We got a full switchboard. Let's see who's out there. 632-6901. Before we go out there, one Dan Quayle quote. Are we ready? This is to the Phoenix Republican Forum, March 1990. Dan Quayle. If we do not succeed, then we run the risk of failure. Yeah. Good evening.
Hello?
How you doing?
Hi, Eric. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Is this supposed to be a talk show?
I'm talking.
So how come you don't pick up the phone when I call?
Well, it's a talk show.
Yeah,
it's a call-in show.
You're supposed to pick up the phone, right?
Well, I pick up the phone, but I picked up the phone now. This is not a self-referential call-in show.
No, no, no.
Well, I don't know. The show is getting really bad now. I think you need improvement.
Yeah, I've noticed a sudden decline. Thanks for bringing it to my attention. Good evening.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
What's up?
Oh, not much.
Oh, so anyway, I got a good joke for you.
Yeah.
All right, I'll tell you a joke later.
Okay, thanks.
End of the show. What's happening, dude?
What's happening? I don't know. You know, things are happening around here. There's some kind of carnival going on outside. I don't know what these people are up to tonight.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's springtime has sprung.
Word.
The birds are out in the sky, and the trees are spouting leaves. And
I noticed that.
Yeah, it's something, isn't it?
That happens every single year. I don't know why, but...
No matter what you do, you can't stop it.
No, I don't know. I put a tape in the recorder thing.
You put your tape in the recorder thing.
Yeah, I'm recording my voice right now.
Ah.
Word up.
Quite an experience, huh?
Yeah, it is. So you want to hear that joke?
Is it clean?
Yeah, it's very clean.
All right.
All right. Is it in? all right, listen. How do you keep a Pollock in suspense?
That's not clean. That's nasty. Good evening.
Yeah, I don't like that last joke that kid tried to make.
Oh, it wasn't funny, so therefore it's not a joke.
Well, I'm glad that you cut him off.
I sure did, and I'll do it again, too, if I have to.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
What's on your mind?
I don't know. This last week's show was boring.
What happened last week? I wasn't here, so I don't know what happened.
The guy, what was he? He was playing music.
Uh-huh.
I called up, and he's like, you're on the air, and I didn't hear my voice over the radio, so I'm like, whatever. Someone will play Confuse the Operator. He want to listen to me, though.
Well, yeah, we have to confuse somebody today.
In fact,
we have a new feature that we're going to be getting to in a matter of moments. It's not Confuse the Operator, but it's something else that I think you'll like.
What's that?
Well, I can't tell you until we do it. It's a surprise, but stay by the radio. And this is a new weekly feature here on Brain Damage.
Yeah, it's that dude is taking fun of the Pollocks, man.
Wow.
You know, don't do that no more.
Yeah, because they have a union.
I'm going to kill
them. Okay. Thanks for calling. We don't need warring listeners here, do we? Good evening. You there? You know, this is the same caller that did this before. I can tell. Good evening.
Oh, hello.
How you doing?
Fine, thank you. I'm really enjoying the Dan Quayle quote. And it just so happens I subscribe to something called the Quayle Quarter.
I've seen that magazine. You know, I brought it in here actually a couple of months ago.
Oh,
and
okay. Well, I was wondering if you wanted a subscription, I'd be happy to forward it to you because it's got some really priceless stuff in there.
Well, if you wanted to Xerox off a couple of pages and forward them over here, that would be great.
Yeah,
that would really be great. We'd share them with all the listeners.
Great. Also, I heard, of course, I have no idea how true this is, that if anything should ever happen to Bush...
Yeah?
The CIA has been ordered to dispatch Quayle with all haste. Have you ever heard anything?
Dispatch Quayle or get rid of Quayle?
Get rid of him.
Get rid of him.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first of all, I wonder how something like that would be made public if it was, in fact, a policy of the CIA, you know?
Well, I think, you know, it slips out just like all the other little things slip out.
Yeah, that's a big thing. I don't think they'd want that to slip out under any circumstance. But, you know, I think if something happened to Bush and then the next day something happened to Quayle, you know, like he falls through a trap door or something like that, I think somebody is going to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, maybe this isn't a coincidence. The American public is surprisingly astute sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Are you not going to do the Confuse the Operator anymore?
Well, no, definitely we are going to keep doing Confuse the Operator. We just might not have time for that today, but yes, I realize that's our top rating pick of Brain Damage. But yeah, we have a new feature that we're debuting, and we just wanted to see how people respond to that.
Okay.
You know, check out the Arbitron figures as they come in on the teletype, and just see what we go with next week.
Great. Well, I'll let you get on with it. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks for calling. And, yes, the Quayle Quarterly. That's something. People, please stop picking up the phone, wherever you are. There's people in the studio picking up the phone. They're not supposed to do that. Not supposed to do that at all. I am very cross. Very cross. Okay, this is a good Dan Quayle quote. I can't say that. Dan Quayle quote. Well, we all know what it is. Okay. This is Dan Quayle as he was being asked to define the term target prices. Target prices is the term that he was asked to define. This is what he said. Target prices, how that works? I know quite a bit about farm policy. I come from Indiana, which is a farm state. Deficiency payments, which are the key,
That is what gets money into the farmers' hands. We got loan rates. We got target prices. I have worked very closely with my senior colleague, Richard Lugar, making sure that the farmers of Indiana are taken care of. Quayle's press secretary then cut short the press conference after a full 2 minutes and 30 seconds. He also said, why wouldn't an enhanced deterrent, a more stable peace, a better prospect to denying the ones who enter conflict in the first place to have a reduction of offensive systems and an introduction to defensive capability? I believe that is the route this country will eventually go. Or how about, I want to be Robin to Bush's Batman. Okay, Dan Quayle. We should have him up as a guest sometime. It'd be a lot of fun. Time for our new feature. And I guess I should preface this with a bit of an explanation. We're speaking about imbeciles and morons and buffoons, simpletons and all those kind of people before. And a couple of us in research and development were sitting around the other day having a few beers, having a Coke or something like that, and talking about various things, you know, and coming up with maybe psychological experiments. Psychological experiments being, how do people respond to really, really dumb questions? Now, how do people respond to that? There's several ways people can respond to a really dumb question. One way is to just completely get angry and say, what's wrong with you? Are you some kind of idiot? What kind of idiot are you? I've never quite figured out an answer to that one. I don't know what particular kinds of idiots there are. Another person would just simply say, oh, and hang up, assuming this is done on the telephone. A third person would be very, very patient and would go very, very slowly. A fourth person would be suspicious and say, what is this, some kind of a joke? Is this Alan Funt? And, you know, et cetera. So what we are endeavoring to do here is categorize the many different kinds of responses that we get to particular stupid questions. And I'm not talking, you know, inane questions. I'm talking really dumb questions, all right? Really, really dumb questions. And you are invited, all of you are invited to send in your stupid questions. Send them in to Stupid Questions, Care of Brain Damage, State University at Stony Brook, Stony Brook, New York, 11794. We're not kidding. The dumber the question, the better. All right. Today, on this program, I guess we have to start the theme. Oh, I did it again, didn't I? These switches are just in the wrong position. Now, the theme. The theme. Are you guys... Yes, it's time for stupid questions here on Brain Damage. Today we will be calling a supermarket and asking them if in fact they take $5 bills as currency. Yes, simple as that. And we'll be gauging their response and tying it into the human condition. Category two that I guess I didn't mention. Those are the people that refuse to answer the phone. A supermarket. Doesn't it make sense that they would answer the phone? Am I expecting too much? time for the backup plan. Okay, thanks very much to the emergency response team for coming in and rescuing us here. Seems that particular store, I don't know, maybe it's being robbed or something, but they're not answering their phone right now, so we have a backup.
Hello, 7-Eleven.
Yes, hi, is this 7-Eleven?
Yes.
Hi, I'm wondering, do you take $5 bills?
$5 bills?
Yes.
Yes.
You do. And do I save anything by using one of those instead of singles?
Excuse me?
Well, that's all I have, you see. I just have $5 bills. And I was wondering if I save anything by just using $5 bills, or is it more expensive?
I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, what I need to know, you see, I only have $5 bills. And I need to know what they're worth. If I bring them in,
they're worth $5.
Oh, so you're saying it'd be worth the same as if I brought in five singles?
Yeah.
I see. Okay, thank you very much. What time are you open until?
Midnight.
You open until midnight?
Close in 4 minutes.
Oh, dear. Well, then I'll probably have to postpone this for another day.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
She was nice. I liked her. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. 7-Elevens don't close. You think she was toying with me? That's what you get when you play games like this, you know? I think she was telling me the truth about the $5, but she may have been pulling my leg when it came to the hours of the store. Next thing you know, they'll be telling you the sky is orange and the earth is flat. Oh, the fun we have. So I'm going to mark that one down as cooperative. But suspicious. And we have time for a couple more calls here. Remember, send those stupid questions in to Stupid Questions here at Brain Damage, WUSB, Stony Brook, New York, 11794. And we'll be more than happy to ask them to whoever it is that we decide to call at close to midnight on a Saturday night. There's all kinds of stupid things you can ask people. Think of the things you've been asked, you know? I'm sure everyone has a story to tell, but we're not here for that. We're here to hear from you, I guess. That's what we're here for. Good evening.
How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Good. Missed you last week.
Yeah, so did I. I was rampaging around New Jersey, so I had no way of being here.
Lucky you.
Yeah, I'm lucky, all right.
Yeah. Boy, that last caller, I can't believe people actually answer those questions.
Oh, people answer all kinds of questions.
Very strange, very strange.
Well, you know, what would you do? What would you do?
I don't know, I probably wonder who the hell was asking me the question.
Ah, then you say, who the hell is this?
Probably, and that's probably...
Then I would have told them who I was. I would have said who I was. You know, this is Eric from Brain Damage.
Evidently.
And they would say, oh, hi, Eric, I didn't know it was you, and they'll tell me the answer anyway. But I guess if anybody needs to know, I can tell them where that 7-Eleven is so they can bring their $5 bills there and get a dollar back for each... Well, $5 back for each one.
That's true.
That's
have
really
one
good.
Little message.
Sorry?
I have one little message for people out there.
Okay.
About Walk America tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and it's a real good cause, and it starts at 8:30 tomorrow. And they can walk at the Indian Island County Park in Riverhead, or at the New York State Office Building in Hot Dog. And it's a real fun way to spend your morning and party afternoon.
Yeah, now you're going to walk from Riverhead to Hot Dog.
No, you walk around in those areas.
Oh, you're walking around Riverhead and around Hot Dog.
Right.
Okay. Now, the same people don't walk around Riverhead and Hot Dog, do they? They have two separate groups of people? I thought maybe you walked around and they bust you over the Hot Dog and you walked around again.
I just wanted to know that.
Okay, all right.
And if you don't want to do that, you can go over to Nassau County and over the Coliseum over there.
Yeah, they're having some kind of big...
They're welcoming home the troops in some parade.
Big extravaganza, right?
Yeah, real big. It's going to be covered on television and everything, so that should be a real cool thing to do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and boy, I was listening to your first call. Hello.
I forget what my first call was, but what about it?
By the racism. That's disgusting. That it happens even here. Because mostly you think it happens in the urban areas, but the guy should really call the cops in turn.
I agree, definitely, and I hope he has by now, because that kind of thing can't be tolerated, and it happens everywhere. It happens everywhere, it happens here, it happens in Connecticut, it happens in New York City, and it's going to keep happening if people like us don't stand up to it.
Right, because he had said, well, when you had asked him if he was going to change what he was wearing, he said, well, no, I'm going to keep on wearing because I'm not going to compromise for anything. Well, that's not enough. You still have to make that phone call, because keep on wearing, it's not going to do anything. It's the fact that you're going to call, and it's going to show people that there are people out there who are going to call, and we're going to make the first step, and we have to fight it.
Very true, very true. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Let's see if we can run down this this switchboard here. Good evening.
Hi, Eric.
How you doing?
How's it going? I was wondering, I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
First one is about the stuff that's coming out now about in 1980 about George Bush and Ronald Reagan, that Jimmy Carter said that he believes that there should be an investigation about the release, the postponement of the release of the hostages until after the election, and then 4 days after Ronald Reagan took his oath of office, there was a large shipment of arms to Iran, and then subsequently the hostages were released.
Was it 4 days after he took office?
That's what I read in Newsday.
That is incredible.
And if that is true, and if these allegations come up, what would be the, I mean, you said earlier in the show, you know, certainly, you know, Bush in 92 and Quayle in 96, and I know you were being a bit cynical, but I mean, if this should arise and if the press gets on it and if the people get on it and start questioning this, you know, you go from 89 to 70% popularity to 60%, and those flags and the yellow ribbons aren't going to be waving for the next 2 years. And you might be talking about a major investigation and an impeachment,
uh-huh.
Right? Bring this up or show the article to people. They say, well, this could never happen because, you know, it's just like there's that big thing in NASA tomorrow and everyone's going to be waving their flags and thinking George Bush should be on Mount Rushmore, so on and so forth. But if you remember, I mean, and at least what I've read, I mean, Richard Nixon was very similar, and he was very popular when the whole Watergate thing came out, and 2 years later he was a destroyed politician, so...
Well, one never knows what the future holds.
True.
And so I'll leave you with that word of wisdom because I want to get to some more calls. But we're going to be watching this.
Okay, great.
All right?
Thanks. Bye-bye.
And here's another Quayle quote. Who would have predicted that Dubček, who brought the tanks in Czechoslovakia in 1968, is now being proclaimed a hero in Czechoslovakia? Unbelievable. Well, as I'm sure many of our listeners know, Dubček was actually the leader of the Prague Spring. And I guess indirectly he brought the tanks in, but... he wasn't the one who gave the order. Oh, I want people to know where Dan Quayle is at all times so that we can always be listening. Good evening.
Yeah, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I got this situation for you. I want you to answer for me honestly.
Okay.
When you wake up in the morning and you have to go to the bathroom and then you have a hard-on, I mean...
Good evening.
Hi, Eric.
How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Okay.
Do you know who this is?
This is a friendly voice.
This is.
I can tell this is a friendly voice.
I know you.
You know more about me than I care to admit, right?
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Uh-huh.
But I do know you. First time I've ever listened to your show, though.
Uh-huh.
I'm what another USB first, person.
The first time you've ever listened to my show?
Well, I listened to it in the studio, but I've never listened to it outside of the studio.
Yeah?
Is this JB?
Yes, I know. I know who it is.
I didn't know you knew who it was.
I know who it is, but do our listeners know who it is?
You not like Dan Quayle? Is that what's going on here?
I love Dan Quayle. He brings hope for the future. Listen to this. May our nation continue to be the beacon of hope to the world. You know how he spelled beacon? B-E-A-K-O-N. That was on his 1989 Christmas card.
Oh. How did you get his Christmas card?
Don't ask how I get these things, but I get these things. No, he didn't send it to me. That's for damn sure.
Wait, what?
He did not send it to me.
Why does Steve Jobs have such a funny beard?
How did Steve Jobs get into this conversation?
I don't know. This is what I was just told to ask. So wait, so you don't like Doug. Who do you want to win the next presidential election? Do you want Cuomo to win, or are you a Bushman, or?
Am I a Bushman? Well, I don't, you know, I haven't really thought about it. Is Cuomo running?
Well, he's making that big tour coming up where he's going all over spreading his words of wisdom. I mean, he can't balance the budget, but he's got time to go all over and be Mr. Democrat. So, I mean, I think he's thinking about it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, Cuomo would make an interesting president, but I don't know. I think Bush has got so many surprises up his sleeve that it's just going to make this country fun to live in, fun to survive in.
Well, it's been a pleasure listening to your show. I'll let you get to other callers.
Thanks very much for calling.
Okay, bye.
All right. And we have Kibred, who's setting things up. He's going to be in here in a minute or two. All right. Good evening.
Eric.
Yo.
How are you?
Okay, I'm fine. How are you?
All right. I want to comment on, I can't believe, you know, people call you and say stuff like that to you.
Oh, people have no respect for me whatsoever.
Does that annoy you?
Not really.
Doesn't?
No. Good evening.
Hello?
How you doing? That caller camped on. That caller is non-campus caller. He camped on. We're running a trace right now. We got him. Folks, that's just going to about do it for us here today. We'll have more Dan Quayle quotes next week because there's too many of them. I want to thank everybody for calling, and stay tuned for No Sound Test coming up immediately. We'll talk again next week. There'll be plenty to talk about. I'll see you at tomorrow's parties, eh? Sunday is here. Good night.
And what costumes ever vulgar wear to all tomorrow's parties? And he done where to all tomorrow's party.
Why some a world a girl?
Kill alone.
In country the load.
Kill alone.
Anyone who's going out of here? We're still